You know, I realized this week while I was preparing today's message that these past weeks when we've been working our way through the readings found in the book of Matthew, that I've always taken, and we've taken together, the perspective of Jesus. Jesus, who was a man. And also, we've talked about in these stories, because they play an important part, the disciples, the 12. And at least in these stories, the 12, the disciples, are also men. Of course, that could be argued that the disciples all weren't men, but that's not for today. So I want to do something different this morning. We're going to look at the gospel reading that we just heard through the eyes of the Canaanite woman. This anonymous woman who, out of desperation to have her daughter healed, breaks every rule imaginable, and in doing so, teaches Jesus. And in doing so, transforms his ministry. So, let's start by setting the scene. You're all going to help me with this. You all have really good imaginations, and you know my services and my preaching is very participatory, so jump in. So, here we are in the land of Canaan. Jesus has ventured up, maybe taking a shortcut. The land of the pagans, the land of the Gentiles. Joshua had come through, this is in the Hebrew scriptures, and taken a lot of this land from the Canaanites in order to create Israel, to create Judea. It had been promised to the people by Yahweh God. So the Jews thought of these people as scum. They were unclean. They were heathens. They had nothing to do with them, or as little as possible. They were impure, and thus one wasn't even supposed to interact with them in any way. They were impure. Okay. So here's Canaan. And now our main character, through whose eyes we are going to be looking at this story, she is a woman. And in all of the Semitic cultures at that time, women were second or even third class citizens. Men usually didn't talk to women who were outside of their families. They looked the other way. They crossed the street. Our woman is probably single. Probably single. And since she has a child, what would she be? What would she be called today? A single parent, a single mother. Today, do single moms face any kind of discrimination that maybe women who are in coupled don't face? Yes, they do. A lot of things. A lot of things are harder. A lot of things they can't get to. They don't have access to all the services and the status in their communities. So this is what we have here. She has a daughter with mental illness, does she not? Says she's demon-possessed. We would probably say now that she has mental illness. And not just any demon, it says severely demon-possessed. An extreme case of demon possession for those days. An extreme case of mental illness. She's probably lower class. She's probably poor because of that. So here we have a single mother, a poor woman, this Canaanite woman. So let's picture her home where she lives. What can you picture? Do you think it's a fancy place with doors and windows? No. It's probably a hut, probably a hovel. It's probably where cattle maybe sometimes, or donkeys or sheep are kept. It was probably cleaned out. Do you think it has a stone floor? No, it's dirt. It's dirt. And because of her child's demoned possession, it's probably away from the other people. What do you think it's furnished with? Not much or nothing, as our sister down here says. Probably not some place to keep a few things, somewhere to sleep. Do you think the cupboards are full of bread and flour and other things? No. She'd be too poor. So who else lives there with her? Somebody tell me. Her daughter. Just the two of them. Just two of them. Anyone here ever live with somebody with mental illness, or in your work with people with mental illness? Yeah. It's not easy. It's a whole different way of living, a whole different way of being. What you have to do every day from sun up until sundown bears no relationship to what people who are not dealing with mental illness or demon possession. There's noise, there's chaos. Families dealing with these things are socially isolated, as we say today. And so was the case back then with the Canaanite woman. So imagine the afternoon. It's afternoon. What would the weather be like? Hot. Seems like it's always hot in the Bible stories, right, in the Gospels. It's always hot. Probably flies coming up. It's oppressive. Heat, flies, dust. She's at her wit's end. She doesn't know what she's going to do. She can't take it anymore. She's been praying for help and praying and praying and praying for days and weeks and months and probably years. She's in the hut. It's hot. It's oppressive. The flies are buzzing. Her daughter is crying out. So she wanders out of the hut just for a moment. Just for a moment, to have a moment's peace and to be able to breathe. And as she steps out of the hut, she sees in the distance a group of men walking. And she can tell by the way they are dressed that they are Jews. And she wonders to herself what they're doing in her neighborhood. They never come there, those people, especially those people who are men. Then she sees there's one of these men walking first by himself, leading the others. And she suddenly realizes, she has heard stories about a man, a Jew, and she realizes that that is Jesus. Imagine that. Her heart leaps. People are saying that this man could be the Messiah, that he is the son of David. And what she has heard, most importantly, is that he is performing what? Miracles. He made a blind man. He made a paralyzed man. He brought a girl back to. He fed 5,000 families, and most important for her, she heard that he had been casting out demons. She had tried everything, absolutely everything, to try to heal her daughter, to make her daughter whole, spent all her money, asked everyone for help, but nothing. So she's standing there and she's seeing this man and the other men, and her daughter behind her is starting to wail and howl, feeling that her mother is leaving her. The flies are buzzing, the dust is blowing in her face. And as she stands there, she sees Jesus start to disappear around a corner. It's now or never. So she makes her move. So she starts shouting. And shouting and shouting to try to get his attention, to try to get him to stop. What do you think that sounded like on that hot afternoon in the dust? Brilliant sun, that sound of that woman. So I'm going to make you all really uncomfortable now, okay? You know, I've made you uncomfortable before and you got through it, didn't you? Okay. So I want you all to put yourselves into a situation in your life, either a time you had to do this or a hypothetical one, where the stakes were really high, where you needed something desperately for yourself or someone else, a loved one, and where you just have 5 seconds to save your child's life, to save your mother's life. And you just have that moment to get the help you're desperate for, the help that you know that that's going to change everything. So, think of what kind of sound you'd make. What kind of sound would you make? What are the words that you would say, okay, in this situation that you are thinking about, what would come out of your mouth, okay? I want you to do this so that you get an idea of what that woman would do to heal her daughter. Her desperation, how she had to get really, really uncomfortable and unsafe in order to do this, okay? You ready? Okay, because we're going to do this, and I'm going to do it too. So, I'm going to count to three, and you have to save your loved one's life by getting the attention of someone else. Okay, if you need to stand up, whatever you need to do, and you're going to make sounds, you're going to say words, whatever it is, don't worry about anyone else around you. The stakes are this high. Someone is going to die if you don't do this. Ready? 1, 2, 3. And over here, come on! Woo, woo! Right here. I need you! Excellent. Whoa. Did you feel that? That would stop me if I were walking somewhere dead in my tracks. Yes, you know how it feels. You knew how that felt to be uncool in front of the people from church by yelling, okay? So let's get back to the Canaanite woman, the woman with no name, the outsider, the dirty woman. They didn't stop. She yelled. She shouted. They didn't stop. So she's got to try something else. She looks back for a moment to make her daughter is okay. And she turned back to look, and he's gone. Jesus is gone. She can't see him. So she starts to run desperately towards where she thought he was, stumbling over rocks, falling, picking herself up over weeds, over bushes. She keeps shouting. She keeps falling. And she shouts again. And this time she says, "Have mercy on me." Have mercy on me. That stopped him. That stopped that man, that Jew leading those other guys. So she's standing there now. She's got their attention. She's a few yards away, standing there, a woman alone with these men. She's not supposed to be near men and not those men. They're Jews. She's just transgressed. She has just violated the way they're supposed to behave. She could be hit. They could throw stones at her. So she's begging. She's begging as she stands there and she says, "Have mercy on me." Kyrie eleison, right? Those of you who grew up Catholic, Kyrie eleison, have mercy on me. And then she says, "Lord, Son of David, Lord, Son of David. She's trying to get to him, right? She's calling him what people are saying him. The Son of David who would become the Messiah is written in the scriptures. Son of David. And then she finally says what she wants him to know, that she needs for him to know. She says, my daughter is demon-possessed. You know how much shame goes with that? I know families, especially when I was young, when we didn't talk about these things, when we hid people with mental illness away, when we hid people with disabilities away, people didn't want to talk about it. I had an aunt with Down syndrome. Nobody ever talked about her. Nobody talked about my aunt. She didn't exist. She existed in no one's memory, even though she was dead. Okay? That's the kind of shame we're talking about. That's the kind of ostracization. So she says, my daughter is demon-possessed. So then, what does she hear? She's waiting for a response. And who responds? The disciples. Not Jesus, but the disciples. And what do they say? They say to Jesus, send her away. She keeps shouting after us. Send her away, that woman. Who is she? She shouldn't be following us. Get her out of here. She's a bother. She's disturbing our afternoon walk. She offended those men by who she was. Offended them. A woman, a Canaanite. How do you think that made her feel? To be put down by a bunch of men like that. Any of you women here ever been in a situation where you had to go ask for something and you go into an office or whatever it was and it's all men? I have privilege because I'm a man, so I've never been in that situation. But how about you women? You know, you've worked up your courage or you really need something and you go. It used to be that way in churches, did it not? It was all men on that church council. You know, or in a court of law, that was a male judge, male attorneys, male people on the jury. You walk into a police station, let's say a woman, you've been sexually violated, you go in the police station with all men. Things are better, but still today, I know young girls and women, same thing. You know, it's like the men have the power. So this is what she was up against. But then what happened when they say, you know, send her away, she keeps bothering us, she keeps shouting after us. Jesus doesn't, does he not? He doesn't send her away. So, be the Canaanite woman again, all right? This is what we're doing today. So, you're standing there. You've just done all of that, taken those risks, probably have stubbed your toes and they're bleeding. And you stand there, and he's looking at you. Jesus is looking at you. You've got his attention. So your heart starts beating really fast. You know, you wait, you get expectant. You know, oh, the miracle worker's looking at me. But then he says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Imagine what that sounded like to her. You know what that means, right? Jesus' ministry at first was just for the Israelites, just for the Jews. So he's telling her, no, you're not one of us. You're not one of the family, so I can't help you. He put her down. You're not worth it. That's what she heard. You're not one of us. So in her mind, think about it. Can you imagine if somebody did that to you and you had these expectations that this man, you know, he'd made these miracles and you've been hearing these things about him, about his kindness and his compassion. And then he says this, and you go, this is the Jesus I've heard about? This is the miracle worker? So does she give up? No, she does not give up. Does she walk away? No, she does not walk away. This woman is relentless. This woman has tenacity, so she just tries something else, another angle. She's going to work another angle. And so what does she do? Yeah, she kneels. I am so uncomfortable doing this in front of you right now. I don't like this. So can you imagine what she felt? You know, have any of you ever had to do that? I think of it as groveling, you know. But for her, she just became really, really humble and had to swallow her pride as a foreigner, as a Gentile, as a woman, and bend down before the man. So, but she's thinking about her daughter, is she not? And her daughter who's suffering. So then what does she say? Help me. Lord, help me. Ayúdame. Lord, help me. Lord, help me. Lord, help me. And remember last week, did we hear that said? We did. Remember when Peter goes out of the boat and he's starting to walk on the water and the doubts come in and he starts to sink down into the storm-tossed sea and he said, Lord, help me. Yeah, there's a through line here, faith and help. And so, feel what she must be feeling. She's on her knees in the dirt, the sun beating down on her head, those sharp little stones like cutting into her knees. She's afraid, and she just said, help me. She doesn't know what the other men are going to do, and she's sitting there on her knees waiting. 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 And what does she hear? What comes out of Jesus' mouth this time? He says, it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. A dog? A dog? He's calling me a dog? A dog? Did I make a mistake? Is this the right guy? Maybe it's not Jesus. This guy doesn't have time for me, doesn't care about anyone but his own people. How can this be? This is what she's thinking. So you're down there in the dirt. You're the Canaanite woman. She must have felt, this was it. It's all over. You know, I'm not going to get any help. I'm not going to get any help. So you're about to get up and walk home back to your suffering daughter in that hovel where there's no food and a dirt floor. But then something stirs within you. And that thing that stirs in you is faith. Faith in a merciful God, faith in a kind God, faith in a loving God, faith in a God that can do all things, make all things new. So her throat is tight. Her throat is dry. And in that silence with that man looking at her and those other men looking at her, she pulls herself together because of her faith and says, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. Whoa, that uppity woman dares to talk back after she's been told what is what and what is possible. She holds her ground and responds to this pronouncement of authority that Jesus said, yes, Lord, but. You know, she knows, given her social location, that there will never be a place for her as a woman, a poor woman, a Canaanite at that table, but she's just vying for a place somewhere in the vicinity of that place. She's willing to settle for that. She's willing to because of her desperation. So she's still on her knees, you're still on your knees, and you've just got that out somehow. And he doesn't respond. Your head is down waiting, so you look up. And what do you see? What did she see? She saw Jesus' face. It was different. It was softer. Something had changed in him. His eyes were brighter. His eyes were kind. She sees him open his mouth. He begins to speak. And she hears him say, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." She goes, "Did I hear right? He knew my wish. He knows that my daughter needs to be healed. He spoke to me. He blessed me." And then what does Matthew tell us? That her daughter was healed instantly. Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. That is one powerful woman, huh? Can you imagine? Can you imagine what we know? We haven't seen that before. We haven't seen that before. She was tenacious. She was courageous. She had this great need. She knew what she wanted, and she knew what could be achieved if God would just answer her prayer. And God did. Did God not? So let me ask you, as we wind down, how far out of your comfort zones would you be willing to go if your faith told you that if you believed strongly enough and had a clear enough vision and you really went for it, what you need to happen could, through faith and through prayer, happen? That is my question for you. Can you be the Canaanite woman? So what are some of those things? You know, I'm just going, for me, you know, when I was in the grips of my addictions, you know, alcohol and drugs and all that, and I knew that I was going to die, and I didn't know what to do anymore, but I knew what I wanted, and that was not to live like that anymore. I started praying, and other people started praying for me. And then I somehow found it through all of that, through my faith, to get in through, walk through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Got some heads nodding here today. That was my own thing. So think of your own thing. What have you had to do? I know a woman with a severely disabled child who wasn't getting the help she needed, and the government had turned her down, didn't qualify for this because she made $500 too much. I mean, you know the scenario, right? Some of you work in social services. Some of these have been your experience. But did she give up? No, she prayed about it. And she goes, "My child deserves this. My child deserves a better life, and I am going to do whatever it takes." So she went to those meetings, and she petitioned, and she was kept going at them, and she got it, right? Lord, have mercy on me. So how about some of the things that we would do, not for ourselves or our families, but for our communities? After praying about it, what would we be willing to do to save our planet from global warming and climate change? How far would we go, like the Canaanite woman, to make sure that doesn't happen? Because it's going to happen if we don't do something. And you know who that's going to impact? It's going to impact our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. They're going to be left living in this mess, this unlivable place that God created so perfectly for us and which we have not cared for. So what would we do? What would we do to ensure equal rights for our lesbian, gay, and transgendered brothers and sisters? What are we willing to do in order to ensure that all children here in Utah receive a quality education? Could we be that Canaanite woman and stand up to police brutality in places like Ferguson, Missouri, where Michael Brown was shot dead, unarmed, walking in the street of his own neighborhood last week? What would we be willing to do to make sure that never happens again anywhere in this country? Are we willing to give up some of our comforts in order to help those men and women from El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, who are bringing their little children on that dangerous journey with smugglers all the way up through Mexico and crossing the Rio Grande into Texas, so to protect those children from the drug cartels and the gangs that infest their cities and towns? You know, that Canaanite woman had a profound effect upon Jesus. Jesus was raised in a culture separated by race, by gender, and by class. And we've been raised in a culture just like that. I hate to say it. She, through her courage and desperation, broke through those walls and told him, "No. No, I too deserve to be a recipient of God's grace." She stood up to him bravely, and she changed him. For what was up to then only a ministry for fellow Jews was broadened to include all people. So we too, through prayer, can be co-creators with God of the world we envision, one of peace, harmony, joy, and equality. Feed your vision, pray, know that with God all things are possible. Amen.